closer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I am your incredibly capable host for today's podcast journey. I'm Todd Conklin, and I'm glad you're here. Thanks for tuning in. Man, oh man, is the summer flying by, or is it just me? Unless you're in Australia or New Zealand, and then isn't the winter flying by, or is it just me? It has been crazy. Lots going on in my world. All of it good, so not a bunch of complaints, at least from my side of the house. Couldn't be much better, really. So that's nice. It's a beautiful day, and I just finished up a really, really remarkable conversation. So I'm excited about today's podcast because of two words. These are the two tough nuts to crack in our industry, no matter whether you're the old view, new view, the super postmodernist view, whatever view you have. Those two words are lessons learned. Because the problem we all share is, what do we do with all this information we're gaining, and how do we put it in a system that allows others to learn without pain, to learn and benefit from events where we have had to been forced to learn and understand? That make sense? Yeah, probably it does. That is a really important thing. And whether you're in a hard hat industry or oil and gas or whatever it is you do, healthcare, whatever you're doing, this becomes really important because you start to amass a body of knowledge that clearly makes a difference. You start to understand events and event precursors to an extent across the facility, extended conditions reviews, and you really get to a point where you have lots of information and you don't know what to do with it. Enter Dave Christensen. He's our interview for today. And I met Dave actually through the Wildland Fire Lesson Learned webpage. And I actually knew of Dave's work before I knew Dave, but I've known Dave for many, many years, and he's remarkable. Now, he comes out of the high reliability side of the house. I think they call it highly reliable organizing now, but I can't really keep up with this. That's quite a sport to see what they call it. But he's really from the side of the house where they look at organizations that in fact exercise and exist in a world of high reliability and kind of reverse engineer and understand those characteristics. And Dave's right there. He's with an organization called Organizing for Resilience. O4R.co. You ought to look it up. He'll talk more about it, but it's worth looking at. He's just a nice, nice guy. He's a great guy, and he's super smart, and he's been doing this a long time, and he has something that lots of other people don't have, and that is a lot of experience in really tackling this lessons learned idea. You're going to love the podcast. I know you are. Until then, though, thank you for being a part of this. Thanks for building community. Thanks for telling people and getting more people to listen. That's really helped us a lot, and our numbers are gigantic. And I guess I'm going to continue to do it. I haven't decided to give up on it yet. As long as I can keep talking to people who interest me and people that interest you, then I think we'll try it for a while. I mean, it's definitely worth trying. I really, really like what I benefit from this podcast, which is this sense of community. And I hope you do, too. I hope there's plenty for you to learn. Other than that, maybe I'll see you in an airport someplace. I'm always looking for you. So if you see me looking around, it's because I'm looking for you. Come up and say hey to me. If not, oh, there's countless other things to do. Getting ready to do a big summit in Houston that'll be fun. And I'll talk more about that as we progress. And then, of course, a gigantic meeting in Amsterdam. And you'll hear more about that as well. So until then, please sit back and enjoy a really great interview with a really great guy. This is Dave Christensen. And he's going to talk to you about what he does and what he's learned. Enjoy.
Oh, man, listening to all your podcasts and taking copious notes, trying to, just imagine who you might have on next.
Bless your little heart. That is so nice to hear.
Well, it's a true story. I'm really excited about all the different familiar voices that I'm hearing, but then also the new ones and you know, how people are just coming up with so many great ideas. It's fantastic.
Isn't it fun to watch this happen?
It is. It is. And it's you doing it because you've got a way to, you know, bring people together and just make it fun.
Well, that's the whole goal. The whole goal was to build a community of thought and to get people together and reinforce and encourage and just to talk to people, just to have conversations.
Yeah. Well, I think that the conversational style works. You know, you got people like Sidney Deckeron that's just full of, you know, his subject and able to just talk extemporaneously about almost anything, I think. And then Ivan Popliti just a couple days ago. These are a couple of my heroes, you know, that I've been working with for some time now. And Randy Cadu. But then there's a lot of these new voices, too. And so it's fun. It's just fun.
Well, so tell us about yourself. Tell us. I'll introduce yourself.
Oh, wow. I guess we're going, huh?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we want to catch the amazing introductory part. That's always the best part of the whole podcast.
Okay. Well, introduce myself. Dave Christensen. I live out in Tucson, Arizona. Have been here for quite a few years now, working in the Southwest, but then also around the world, thanks to the New View and a lot of the things that you guys have exposed me to and helped me to come to understand. I used to work with the Wildland Fire Lessons Learned Center, had a position there that was funded by the Forest Service. And so people like Pup, I was, you know, connected with. And then also he introduced me to Sidney Decker in building the Lessons Learned Center. Over the last, well, it was 12 years that I got a chance to build that from scratch with the help of a lot of other really smart people. I got an invitation to go over to Sweden to give a presentation on high reliability organizing to a group over there. And while I was there, I got a chance to then pop on over to Norway and visit with Statoil and people there that were interested in the same subject, and then down to Lund, Sweden, to actually meet Sidney face to face. And I had just begun reading some of his work at the time, and later ended up in his master's degree program in human factors and system safety, and met a lot of other people from all over the world that were interested in the same topics. From many different industries, really an eclectic group, you know. And so you got a lot of different perspectives, and it was just fun sharing ideas and transferring knowledge across those geographic divides, you know, across oceans and continents. It's just fun.
You're just sitting here making me smile. I just love listening to your voice, Dave.
It's all that voice training you told me to get ready to do here.
That's right. Your vocalization work. It's perfect. So let's pew back a little. That was a great introduction. And let's talk a little bit about the Lessons Learned Center, because my love affair started with you really through the website, through the Lessons Learned Center. And then I got a chance to meet and work with you and have for years, and it's been fun. But what was your purpose behind that Lessons Learned Center? Why did you guys start that? And why was it so, it was incredibly good. It's incredibly good.
Well, thank you. I'm probably one of its harshest critics.
And you probably should be. I mean, that makes sense.
Because, you know, you have these hopes and dreams of how it could be and should be and hopefully will be someday. And you do the best you can within an organization to make it so. And, you know, we were able to do a lot, but then there's a lot more that could be done. This Lessons Learned Center for the wildland firefighting community came out of tragedy that happened back in 1994 with South Canyon. And, you know, firefighters, not rookies, not amateurs, but real professional, high-end, you know, firefighters, you know, hotshots and smoke jumpers and people that were like, wow, these guys know that business. how could this have happened to them? And if it could happen to them, there was the realization throughout the community, I think, that it could happen to us. And so they began to look at, well, what are we doing to prepare ourselves for the unexpected? And how do we build the skills that we need? And we were doing a lot about fire behavior and the science of fire, how it moved across the landscape, and how could we forecast where it was going to go next and that kind of thing. But we hadn't done a lot at that point in time in the mid-90s about learning about how human beings interacted with this phenomenon of wildland firefighting, but then also with each other. And so we began to learn about human factors from people like Carl Weick and Kathleen Sutcliffe, who, you know, actually came and spoke to the community up in Missoula, Montana in 95. And so we began this era of learning about, well, what's been done in this arena of human factors and system safety. And years later, even though it had been suggested almost immediately through the Tri-Data study, people that came in from the outside and looked at our wildland fire community, and we asked them, what do you see? And they said, well, let's take a look at your attitudes towards safety and see what we come up with. And they did a 3-year study and came up with 282 recommendations.
Wow.
Yeah. And they said, if you don't do anything else, do two things. Set up a leadership development program, because that's going to probably be one of the biggest impacts on decision making that you could possibly implement. And then also set up a single lessons learned center for the entire interagency wildland fire community, not only for each of the 5 federal land management agencies, but also for the states and the counties and the rural fire departments, anybody that interacts with wildland firefighting out in the forests or in the wildland urban interface, where we're building a lot of homes and asking, you know, people are asking us, okay, if we can live here, because we really want to live in the fuel, if you guys don't mind. And of course, you're going to protect us, right, if something happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bizarre how, you know, 60% of the homes that were built for many, many years were actually built out in that wildland urban interface. And it's probably not gotten any better.
Yeah, no, in fact, probably quite the opposite. It's probably, let's peel that back, because what you're saying is really interesting to me. So in the mid-90s, we tried really hard to understand the hazard, the linear predictability of the hazard of fire, right?
Yes, the science, the chemistry, the, you know, how did fuels interact with topography and terrain and weather and all of that.
When we started shifting away from understanding the consequence, because the consequence is just consequence. My favorite thing to hear you guys say is that it's all fuel. Some of it just has doors and windows. I mean, I'm sure that's not a comforting thought to people, but it's remarkable when you think about the fact that they all burn and every fire eventually burns out. What I think is interesting is this shift towards the human to systems interface. And you guys were so early, and you had to be so early because of the work you did. And I love the story you just told, because it says we have to engage our leadership in redefining the problem, understand the problem differently at the leadership level, and we have to learn. How did you get picked to be the lessons learned guy? Did you win a prize? Was there a drawing, like a lottery?
It was like winning a prize for me, because I had children that were working in public safety, 3 of them in the fire business and structural fire departments, one of them a police officer. And so, you know, I was listening to the stories of my children talking about their exciting public service lives and careers. And so for me to be able to work with this wildland fire community was just a phenomenal coup in my mind. But I had a background in working with geographic information systems, remote sensing, spatial decision making, technologies. And so I had some information about how to work with computers. And I asked the lady that was actually interviewing me for the job, she says, Dave, we think you've got about 9 out of the 10 things that we're looking for. And I said, well, I don't have that fire background personally. And she said, it's okay. We'll get you that. You know, you can learn how to become a wildland firefighter. We need all those other skills that you bring. I said, all right, you know, I'll apply and, you know, we'll see where it goes. And
what were your initial desires for that Lessons Learned Center when you started thinking about, because I don't know if people have gone to it. I'm sure they will after they hear this podcast, but what was your initial plan? What was your strategy when you first started?
Well, there were some hopes that we would be able to create a system that supported not only the collection of knowledge and ideas and reports and, you know, documents and multimedia, eventually video, all kinds of ways of capturing things, but then to actually be able to get working with people as they try to implement products that could be coming out of this knowledge base and work with them through their implementation phase and find out what worked and what worked well and how can we adjust it to be even better and generate dialogue and get people talking across these agencies. And because we were finding that people had already solved some problems in some areas.
Right.
And they didn't know that 50 miles away, there were other people that needed the same solutions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so to get people talking and generate the dialogue, that was the hope. And I think it's still a big part of where we need to go.
When did you start to snap to the idea that learning was a really good prevention tool?
Oh, wow. That was way back in my career in the military when I was in the Air Force. I had the privilege of running what's called an alert force center, where we had F-15 jet fighter aircraft on 5-minute alert and another backup on 15-minute alert. And I was running these crews like Indy 500 pit crews. And we began to learn how we could not only do things safely in a very dangerous environment. These birds had, you know, missiles hanging down with fins and sharp jagged points everywhere, and we're running around underneath these things, launching them out and getting them out on the runway, usually in about 2.5-3 minutes.
Wow.
And yeah, it was, you know, it was fun. And but we had to do it safely, and we had to you know, try to do it better and better to shave off seconds and even half seconds off of launch times and recovery times, you know, get them back, disarm them, refuel them, rearm them after you inspect them and make sure that everything is still going to be good to go. And so it was fun. It was challenging. And I began to see that, you know, the more we learn, the better we get. And it's it became part of what we did and who we were, not like a lot of organizations that kind of treat learning like, that's nice to do if you got time, but let's do some real work.
Oh, I even see the opposite. I see organizations that don't learn, that purposely choose kind of collective ignorance because it's easier.
Well, it's an easy button until something happens.
Right, right. Then it's a bad button. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and then they wonder, well, you know, we gave them all these rules and prescriptive ideas on how to do the work, and then they went off and did other things. And what? How did they get there from here? And the differences between work as prescribed and work as actually done is another area where you begin to discover, if you're willing to look, how creative and innovative and brilliant some people really are.
And it's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. What's the best way to share lessons learned? I mean, I know you're going to be humble when I say this, but you're probably one of the world's experts, at least in lessons learned as it relates to high reliability and system safety. What do you think the best way to share lessons learned is?
The best way, I think, if I had the opportunity to put people together that build relationships, cultivate relationships, and help people to coach and mentor and understand where each is coming from, not that they're always going to reach consensus, but that they can move forward together and construct new realities based on lessons that have come from the past and lessons shared from each of their worlds and effective practices and the wisdom that comes from, you know, looking at many different ways to do some of the same things, but then maybe using the ones that seem to really resonate and work with them, you know, and even from different industries, you know, they don't all have to be from wildland fire. We've learned from people in petrochemical and oil and gas production and high-rise building construction and a lot of different safety-critical, high-risk industries that are able to communicate and have relationships with each other that are trusted. And I think that's the cornerstone, Todd, is the trust that's developed so that you can feel like I can listen to these people or this person and really feel like they have a genuine outgoing concern for me and my being successful, and I have the same feeling for them.
Wow. I think the podcast, we just made our money right there. Well, that was amazing. That was amazing. So what are you doing now?
Well, I retired from the Forest Service January of 2014, and well, before that time and since, I've been building this international network with these other safety-critical, high-risk industries. Been doing a lot of work with France, the firefighting community there. Been to Corsica, the island in the Mediterranean there, that where they're talking about building a center for wildland firefighting across the Euro-Mediterranean area.
Wow.
There's exciting stuff going on all over the world. People in France are connected to people in the Netherlands. I've got some good friends there that I'm working with. There's an organization that we've created called Organizing for Resilience. And we built a website and we're, you know, trying to share information through that website. I'm currently building a battalion chief certification program for a structural fire department right here in my own backyard. A lot of good stuff, a lot of ways to bring the new view to many different industries, not just for human error or safety or high reliability organizing or human performance improvement. Do you notice the list is growing?
I do notice that. We should talk about that. Don't you think that's amazing?
Well, it's something that could be a glue that holds many different things together and brings these multiple perspectives together so that people talk about, well, here's how I see it, you know, and here's how it helps me. And, you know, but I think at that cornerstone level, it builds trust and develops successful relationships among people.
What's the most important thing a safety person out there, you know, somebody listening to this podcast, what's the most important piece of information you'd share with them on their journey that they're starting into this kind of safety differently, this new view? Because you've been on this journey a long time, and so lots of these ideas are pretty normal for you, but for other people, they're pretty new, they're pretty amazing. They're somewhat controversial.
I know. I'm continually surprised at how people respond. The variety. It's talk about wide variability and your need to be flexible. But I think that if I were talking with somebody who this is just totally new to, and it's like, wow, I wish my boss were here. I hear that a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
And I really wish I could just flip a switch and everybody would kind of turn from old view to new view. But that ain't going to happen. And so, you know, I think, just try to be patient, not become emotionally engaged. This is another area, emotional, social intelligence. It's something that definitely can benefit from the new view, or the new view could benefit from our ability to be able to be aware of how we are, each of us internally ourselves, but then how do we interact with other people and how are they responding to this information? And I found, too, that I can't always believe what they tell me. They may think they need the incident command system.
Right.
When actually what they really need is relational leadership and looking at how their systems are really working against them, and they're getting the behaviors that they're getting because their systems are actually creating that behavior, and the people are functioning the way that you have told them you want them to behave within that system, because you've disabled this, or you enabled that, or you've restricted their resources in ways where they're doing the best job they can with what you've given them to work with.
But in many ways, if you go in and do that kind of diagnosis for people, that's worth its weight in gold as well, right? Because they think they need incident command because that's the lever that they think will improve performance. But when you go in to look at, you know, whatever, incident command is a great example, and discover deeper issues within the system, that diagnosis process is still incredibly valuable.
Diagnosis, but getting them to self-discover.
Right. Talk more about that.
Well, people can self-design better than you ever could for, or any of us ever could for them. They know their people, they know their systems, they know their company, their history. They know so much more about themselves than you ever will. But if you can help them to begin talking about where they're at and how they got there and where they want to go and why, then you begin to get this conversation that you can plug into and say, well, you know, I think I can help you with this or with that, because there are some new ways of thinking that have actually been well tested for the last 50 years in many cases that you may not be aware of. And so there are these opportunities to grow and really impact your bottom line in positive ways. And if you can turn it into something that really makes good business sense, then it's like, well, why wouldn't we do this?
So your new venture is called Organizing for Resilience.
Yes.
O4R, right?
O4R. And then if you go to the website, O4R.co, not .com, there's a guy over in India that has that URL and he wants a lot of money for it.
Right? Yeah, well, then we'll make sure that he doesn't get that money. That's good.
So anyway, yeah, O4R, the number 4, .com. And, I would love to, you know, work with as many people as I can over the next 10, 15, 20 years, to really help this move from where it is now. And you have a better sense probably of where it really is among multiple safety critical high risk industries than I do, but let's try to get it even more broadly accepted, and because I think it can make a huge difference.
Oh, absolutely! I'm constantly encouraged by how this is growing, how it's moving virally, and how this new understanding this new view is really impacting organizations more and more and more almost every day, because it changes the way companies manage their business, which changes the quality of workers' lives, which makes people safer and happier and more productive. That's a remarkable thing. What about if a company was interested in pursuing their lessons learned systems, their programs to share and build community? I mean, are you guys a good resource for that?
I think we're one of the best.
Yeah, I would agree. I wholeheartedly agree. And what's interesting is I think that is, in many ways, one of the tougher nuts to crack. And you bring so much to the table. You've already learned. You've already made all the mistakes early. You know what I mean?
We made a few.
Yeah. And so you've already learned what not to do, which makes you so much more profoundly effective in knowing what to do. And that's a big part of it. That's really fun. What a great conversation. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you. I appreciate all the kind words.
Did we cover everything, you think?
Wow. I think we covered a lot. I think that there's a lot more, is available. And really, if people are interested, I sure hope that they get in touch with either one of us or the others that I mentioned earlier in the call.
Oh, you bet. But I like the fact that you bring to the table this much, I don't know, the whole lessons learning. So I hope everyone that listens does two things. Go out and look at what the Wildland Fire Lessons Learned Center has done historically for the last dozen years or so, because it's amazing. And go to Dave's website, o4r.co. I think that would be, those are two assignments. That's your homework. Two assignments that you ought to do.
Yeah. All right.
So what'd you think? That's Dave Christensen. I enjoyed it. The middle section I thought was really meaningful and good, and it's great to hear these voices. It's nothing but good to know that we're building community, and I'm glad you're doing it with me. That's the podcast for today. As always, learn something every day. Do some fun stuff. It's summer. Go crazy. And for goodness sakes, be safe.